today, in light of the readings, and it's something that always brings me great joy, is when people give words from God, and you see that there's a theme that goes together. It's obviously something that God is trying to communicate, and the one word was from Isaiah 61, which Yeshua reads, Nazareth, about the Spirit of the Lord being upon him to accomplish the will of the Father. Then and also the another woman spoke about God calling us to him. What are we gonna turn to him? Are we gonna turn our backs to him? So today, I thought it was great because I wanted to speak about intimacy preceding obedience or observance. Kind of a Jewish, the Jews would say we're observant. Kind of it envelops obedience, but nonetheless, either one is fine. But the idea that we have to be intimate, close with God, in order to then from there to stem out to be obedient to God. I think we would all say we want to be obedient. The question is, how do we do so? So I wanted to look from these are all stemming from the weekly readings. So if we look back at Exodus from the readings we did, and I'm paraphrasing, starting in Exodus 33, Moses is in a position that he, frankly, probably doesn't really want to be. If you read that, Moses gets frustrated a lot, and especially in this passage when he goes up and they get free from slavery. And they go to the mountain, and the mountain is exploding. It's like a Michael Bay movie. It's just out of control, and people are flipping out. And they said, we don't want to go close. You go before us. So Moses goes. He encounters God, and he gets the 10 sayings, the 10 commandments. And he brings them down, and what are they doing? They're saying, welcome, great, we want the commandments. No, that's not the story. They built a golden calf. And Moses, he flips out, and now he throws the stones at them. And he says, what is going on? So now he's at the point where Moses is beseeching God, says, if I found favor in your eyes, go with us. Because if you don't go with us, a couple things. A, we won't survive. And B, how is anybody going to know we're any different? Because we're just a bunch of ex-slaves in the middle of the desert. And what makes us any special? I mean, in Deuteronomy 7, we learn that Israel is no better than others. Actually, we're the least. So something's got to make us different. So he asks him for all these things to show him. He says, if I find favor with your eyes, then God even at one point says, you do find favor in my eyes. Moses again requests, if I find favor in your eyes, go with us. He's in a crisis. And God says to him, I'll cause all my glory to go past before you. And he says, show me your glory. Show me your face. And God says, no, you can't see my face. That's a little too much. But I can show you my back. So he puts him in the cleft of the rock. And he shows him his back. And he declares the 13 attributes of mercy. And then the Lord tells Moses, beginning in chapter 34, chisel out for me new stone, new tablets. And I will write on them the 10 sayings that I told you before. And then you're going to bring them down and tell the people what they're to do. And he talks about making this covenant with them and to go into the land of Israel and to be obedient, not to get mingled up with the wrong crowd. Don't marry with them. Don't even be friends with them. You got to get them out because they're going to pull you into disobedience. So if we look at the order of things, God comes, Moses asks him for his presence, and God comes and appears before him in the fullness that a man could withstand at that time. And he declares who God is, that he's merciful, that he's kind, that he's slow to anger. I mean, and if God had a reason to be angry at this moment, he certainly did. But he's slow to anger. That he's full of mercy, and that he's also just, that he also visits the iniquity upon the third and fourth generation. that God's full of mercy. It's the first thing he tells them, but he's also just. So after declaring God's character to Moses, then he writes upon it the commandments, and he tells about the covenant he's going to make. So we see that the first thing, what's most important, is knowing who God is and being in the presence of God as much as we can handle. I mean, if you continue to read the story, Moses, his encounter with God, even seeing God's back, makes his face so radiant that the people, when they see him, they cover their eyes. It's so much. Imagine his face. It would have killed them. That's how powerful it was. So Moses comes down, and in the fullness of God's presence is radiating off him. He gives them the commandments of God. You see that the presence of God, the intimacy with God, has to precede and accompany obedience. Then let's turn to Ezekiel 37, where Ezekiel gets this very cryptic vision of all these dry bones. And the Lord asks him, can they live again? And Ezekiel says, you know. It's a good answer, by the way, to God. If God asks you a question and you don't know, just tell him, remind him that he knows. Because you really can't get in trouble. So he says, you know. And he says, prophesy to the bones. I'm going to put ligaments and tissue and skin on it. And he does. And these bodies stand up. But then it says that there's no life in them. And why is there no life in them? Because the spirit is not breathed into them. Which is a clear reference to Genesis 2. That God created man, and then he made him physically. But it wasn't until he breathed into him the nishmat chayim, the breath of life, the spirit of life, that they became different. That's what separates us from animals. And when you hear people say, oh, a dog's life is worth the same as an animal, a human's life, it's not. You might love your dog, but it's not equatable in God's eyes. The difference is because God didn't breathe into animals the same spirit that he breathed into us. Some people want to spend thousands of dollars on their dogs when they get sick. Okay, you can do that. But we are on a different level. Because the spirit of God is in us. And that's what separates us from them. While we're both alive, we see that it's only the Spirit of God that makes man alive. And man was made, he was formed, in a way he was even resurrected. But he wasn't alive until the Spirit came upon him. And so Ezekiel has to prophesy to the Spirit to come from the four corners of the earth and to breathe into them, to Israel, the Spirit of God, so that they could live. And this precedes, he says, and they will live, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. And then if you continue on, he talks about even unifying the people, and that the servant David, in 37:24, my servant David, now David's obviously been long dead since this time. This is a reference to the Messiah, will be over them, and they'll be a shepherd. And then it says, the second part of that verse, they will follow my laws and be careful to keep my decrees. Again, you see the order of things. They have to be physically resurrected. And then the Spirit of God has to be blown into them. The Messiah rules over them. And then they will keep my commandments. We see here that the Spirit, to receive the Spirit, the Spirit to be inside of us, has to precede obedience. If you even go back a chapter, in Ezekiel 36, when Ezekiel prophesies about the new covenant, this new covenant, you know, very similar to Jeremiah 31. He says in 36:27, and I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. So if anybody's, you hear that the Spirit of God comes into us and he moves us to obey him. Which is a lot like what Paul says to the Philippians in chapter 2, that it's God, in chapter 2:13, for it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. So it's kind of ironic that our obedience really stems from God. We could say, I'm obedient, I try my best to be obedient, but really outside of his power, we will fail. You might do a little bit, but look at even Moses. The guy, I mean, he saw so much of God, and yet even at the end of his life, his frustration overtook him, and he sinned. He failed against God. It's really only when we seek God and we run to his presence and we beseech him, we spend time in his presence, and we in call upon the Spirit to flow within us that we truly can be obedient. And it's God who does not only to do it, but to will it. He changes our hearts, like we've read, I'm sure, hopefully we've all read in the New Covenant scriptures, that it's God who wills within us. He writes the Torah in our hearts so that it becomes part of our nature. Right, Yeshua says, from the outflow of the hearts come the things of life. If your heart is clean, you'll give forth clean things. And how do we make our hearts clean? By Yeshua's sacrifice and receiving it and accepting it and humbling ourselves and saying, Lord, lead me. So even the most obedient person can't even take credit for him. As Paul says, you know, this is not your work so that no man may boast. That ultimately all things come back to giving credit to God. Jeremiah 9, it says, let the rich man boast in his riches. You can't buy obedience. Let not the wise man boast in his wisdom. You can't even be super wise. You can learn all the books you want. Let not the strong man boast in his strength. Right? You can't force your way into it. But he who knows me, let him boast in that. If we know God, he'll give us the ability and the desire to obey him. Yeshua said in John 14, if you love me, you'll obey what I command. Now, how do you love someone? You could say it, and it kind of brings me to an illustration. For those of us who are married, usually in the beginning, you're passionate, you're kind of enraptured, you're enthralled, you're enamored. Any other words from a thesaurus you could use? All these things compel us to be with that person and likewise to do things for them, to serve them, to what would you like, honey? How would you like your coffee this morning? What can I get you? You know, I'd love to rub your back. Oh, so on and so forth, right? You want to watch, you know, your channel? Sure, go ahead. But as years go on, and as life creeps in, and then you add kids into the mix, life becomes a lot about just doing what you got to do. And times of intimacy are sparse, and it becomes challenging, and you find yourself just life is just, it's harder. And you have to be more attentive to the kids, and so on and so forth, and you have work, and you get back, and then your times of intimacy are, hi, how are you? Let's go to bed. But you have to focus. One of the biggest things you have to focus on is making time for that intimacy. Because for a few reasons. One is you need it. You want it. Your spouse is the higher place. You love your kids. You lay down your life for your kids. But if you're not close with your spouse, you won't do well by your kids, and also your marriage, that is the foundation of it. So you have to make time for that. Secondly, when you're with that person, you enjoy them and you spend more time with them, you want to serve them more. And things are better. When that part of your soul is met, it's a lot easier to do those things. As opposed to just, hi, you always say, hi, I love you, good morning, little kiss. But, you know, in a way, it's just kind of perfunctory duties that you're doing. But when you're really with the person and you spend time with them and you get your in-laws to babysit and you get out, you know, even if you don't even say anything, sometimes we just sit there. It's like, oh, it's so quiet. It's so nice. It refuels you. And it even refuels you to love your kids. And it's necessary. And I think it's why relationships fall apart. It's because they don't spend enough time with each other once the busyness of life creeps in. Likewise, we have to spend time with God and make time. It's not something you say, hi, God, I love you, good morning, help this day. Sometimes we have days like that, and that's okay. As my rabbi said, look, it's not a quantity thing. God knows our hearts. No, you have to imagine times even when David was on the run from Saul that I'm sure he didn't stop and say, guys, hold on, we got to pray. Saul, can you wait a second? I mean, that's life. Sometimes you don't have that luxury. But you have to make an effort. And you have to set aside time. And Yeshua was up often before dawn. Yeshua was up, he stayed up all night. And there are times he went away from his disciples. He had to make an effort. And so it's imperative upon us that we find this time and make this time. And that means that you take time away from other things. And it has to be diligent, because if this need is not met, then it affects everything else in life. It affects our marriages, it affects our kids, it affects our jobs, it affects our congregation, and it affects our obedience in general. And it also makes whatever we do, it gives it life. You know, Yeshua said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. If we don't spend time with life, then what do we have? Not life. What's not life? It's death. There's no life. There's nothing in it. And we need those things. Whether it be ceremonial things, like even when we, like the Seder, which I personally, I love a lot of the rituals and the traditional prayers. But if Yeshua is not there and central and front and welcome, then there's no life. So what's the purpose? On the other hand, if he is there and his spirit is flowing and he's central and our focus is on him, then there's life, and that's great. It's not that they're at odds with one another. It's just priorities. It's just focusing upon him and welcoming his spirit, and that we then whatever we do, it will glorify our Father in heaven. So all this is to say is I encourage every one of you. The season of Passover, we count the Omer, and we come towards Shavuot. Use this time. God didn't give us the Torah right after we left Passover. We weren't ready. We weren't ready. I mean, think about it with a bride to be getting ready for her wedding. There's a lot to do. She wants to get ready and be prepared. Even when we celebrated Purim, they spent a whole year getting Esther ready. Prepare yourselves for receiving the Torah and the Spirit of God. Prepare yourself for saying, how can I change and make more time for him? Even once they got to the mountain, God said, 3 days, get ready. Focus on God. Focus on spending time with him, on reading his word. I know I feel like I'm a record that probably many of you heard, but the emphasis can't be emphasized enough. Make time for him. Seek his face. Cry out to him. Let him fill you so that when you go through life, it's he who is in you, willing and working in you to do his good pleasure. When you do that, that's what changes. That changes your life and changes everybody else's life. This is what brings freedom. The Spirit of God within us because of Yeshua. Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.